We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Bite, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
On the Cowboy Sports Network from Learfield IMG College. Welcome to the Oklahoma Genetics Summer Series. Brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, bringing OSU's world-class wheat varieties to the farmers of the plains. Now, here's the voice of the Cowboys, Dave Hunziker.
Welcome to another Cowboys Summer Series program brought to you by our friends at Oklahoma Genetics. Today, we feature a visit with former Cowboy basketball All-American Joey Graham, who had a 7-year NBA career and was a key member of Oklahoma State's Final Four and Big 12 championship squad in 2004. Before we begin, a word about one of Oklahoma State's outstanding wheat varieties marketed by our friends at Oklahoma Genetics. Today, the first topic of discussion as far as varieties are concerned, Double Stop CL Plus. And Double Stop CL Plus is at the top of the class when it comes to two-gene Clearfield varieties. Double Stop CL Plus is another OSU Graze and Grain and Golden Grain wheat variety. It's widely preferred by millers. And Double Stop CL Plus tunes out rye and other tough weedy grasses. It combines high yield, test weight, resilience, and show wheat quality in one variety. Double Stop CL Plus offers a competitive canopy, is acid soil tolerant, and stripe rust resistant. Double Stop CL Plus has been affirmed by the Wheat Quality Council. Log on to okgenetics.com to learn more about Double Stop CL Plus and other outstanding OSU-developed wheat varieties. We begin our visit with Joey Graham when we return on the Cowboys Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics and Learfield IMG College. This is the Cowboys Summer Series, and joining us now is former Cowboy All-American and former NBAer Joey Graham, who's back living in Stillwater. So first, bring people up to date. What's going on with you now?
Well, first of all, it's good to be here with you, Dave. It's another beautiful day out here, but just, you know, moved back to Stillwater a little bit, about a year now I've been here back. So it's good to be back. This is always home away from home. As many people know, Tampa is my home, first home, but this is my second. So the wife and I went to school here some years back. I don't want to consider myself old, but some time ago. And, you know, we decided to raise a family here. So just back here enjoying Stillwater and the environment and the people back here in Stillwater.
In case fans don't know, Joey is married to the former Trisha Skibbe, who was an outstanding women's basketball player here at Oklahoma State and played professionally. So were you guys together in school? I'm trying to remember. Were you guys together in school or no?
We were. The first year I was here was my redshirt year. So I was just getting acclimated and getting used to everything that was going on here. Then that following year was our junior year. So that's the first year that we started dating. And then she left the end of that season because that was the end of 2004. So she went from there and played overseas for about 9 or 10 years. And I stayed an extra year. Which would have been 2005. So we dated for about a year or so when we were here.
What were the benefits and what have been the benefits of being married to someone who played basketball and obviously understands it? And are there any downsides to it?
Well, she was the best player on the girls' team, and I was arguably the best player on the men's team. So it kind of just fit together. Coach Sutton.
We won't bring John Lucas into this. We don't want to get a big argument going.
No, we don't want to do that. But Coach Sutton was fans of it. Coach Dickey was fans of it. And they were saying, hey, as long as you guys bring the best out of each other, we don't have a problem with it. So I enjoyed it. It was good then. It's even better now. So I'm loving every minute of it.
And you're coaching now.
I am. I'm over at Stillwater High School with Chick Davis. Ran into him when I first was doing training here in Stillwater over a year ago, and ran into him, and he said, hey, there's a coaching job open over here at the high school. Would you be interested? I said, yeah, sign me up. So here we are.
Is that something you envisioned yourself doing or no?
You know what? Not exactly. I've been doing training ever since 2006 when I was in the NBA, mostly youth training and leadership programs and things of that nature. So when I kind of just transitioned out of the NBA, I just fell right into it. So doing the training that I do, it's almost just like coaching. You know, you got a group of kids that you're trying to lead and mentor and show them the right things to do as far as basketball and as in life. So, yeah, it just kind of goes hand in hand. So I enjoy every minute of it.
Have players changed? Players in high school now, are they different than they were when you were in high school or no?
Everything has changed. I don't want to knock on, you know, the generation now, but I guess the kids now seem a little bit more entitled.
Oh, really?
I think that the kids now think that, you know, you can post a video on Instagram or, you know, do something of that nature and think that, you know, the pathway is just going to open up for you and the NBA is just going to be right there at your feet. But it doesn't work that way. I'm from the old Eddie Sutton old school where hard work pays off and you have to put in the time to reap your benefits. And, you know, the kids nowadays, I try to express to them like and tell them and say, hey, you have to spend the hours in the gym. You got to, of course, make the grades, but nothing's going to be handed to you. You have to go put in the work. You have to spend the time. You got to shoot your shots. You got to work on your ball handles and you got to work on your fundamentals. And then the rest will fall into place.
What fundamentals perhaps do you feel like they are lacking, that you're really encouraging, that may be more of an issue now than it was, say, 10 or 15 years ago? Are there one or two things that guys just don't do as well that they need to do better?
Absolutely. Basic fundamentals is in every aspect of life, whether it's basketball, football, soccer, you know, being a doctor. You have to stick to the core. You have to have a solid foundation. And the fundamentals that I teach are those basic foundations. And I think nowadays the kids get away from the basics. You know, Eddie Sutton wasn't a guy that wanted you to go outside of what was normal, what was natural for you. And kids nowadays, you know, they think shooting the three-pointer is the best thing in the world. They think dunking the basketball is the best thing in the world. Yes, it is. But there are better ways and other ways to do things to get things done the right way and accomplish the same goal, which is winning the game and doing it the right way. So I think kids nowadays think that they can get away with, I'm going to just come into the gym, shoot a bunch of threes, or if I can dunk, you know, and dunk on somebody, you know, everything happens the way it's supposed to happen. That's not the way it works. You got to be able to do the details, the things in the middle, the things on the out, be coachable. There's a lot of intangible things that go on in and outside of, you know, just the basic fundamentals. And I think the kids nowadays, it's easier for them to step away from that. And I don't want to blame the NBA, but they are the catalyst for it because you have guys like Steph Curry and James Harden. And it's, let's just put it into place. It's the NBA. Those guys have paid their dues. They've spent the time. And they're at the place where they're supposed to be because of a certain reason. The guys in high school, the guys in college, you got to pay your dues. You got to do the little things before you can get to those shots, before you can go shoot, you know, 20 threes in a game or be able to dunk on somebody. You got to do the little things first. So I say the NBA is a catalyst for that is because guys think that they can just come out and do those things now and not do the little things before and make it, and it doesn't work that way.
Is there something about the current NBA game that you think needs to change? How it's played, how it's structured, et cetera?
Well, the game, of course, the NBA is evolving, and the game now has definitely changed since I was there. It's not as physical, of course. Guys can get away with a lot more, and I think that plays a part with, you know, high school basketball and in college basketball. Guys think that, you know, if you get touched just a little bit, they're supposed to get fouled. So they complain to the refs more, or they think they're supposed to get this, or they're the man on the team and they're supposed to be handled a certain way. It doesn't work that way. The NBA is the NBA. You treat high school how it's supposed to be treated. You treat college how it's supposed to be treated. And then when you get there and graduate from each level, high school, college, pro, you know, everything will follow into place where it's supposed to be.
It's interesting. I had a coaching friend tell me, not affiliated with Oklahoma State, made this comment. The difference between a great player and an elite player is often the ability to finish with contact. Agree with that?
I 100% agree with that. If you look at all the best players, the Hall of Fame players that have played high school, college, or the NBA, what was one of the main things that they were able to do? Get to the free throw line. And a lot of times, you know, when I played here, and a lot of people know, I spent the majority of my time on the free throw line. That was one of the reasons why I led the country in consecutive free throws and here in Oklahoma State as well. And it's a major part of the game. You're going to get fouled. You're going to get touched. But the thing that you need to be able to do is knock down those free throws. And a lot of kids don't understand they're free shots. They're extra points without a defender trying to contest your shot. So why not? Why not embrace the contact? Why not embrace the game where you're going to get hit? That's just part of it.
A lot, and with good reason, is talked about regarding Coach Sutton and his leadership ability and all the wonderful things that he brought to the table in that manner. And we'll probably get back into that later. But from a fundamental standpoint in terms of how to play the game, the skills required to play the game at the highest level, what are the one or two things that jump out in terms of what he taught that you still carry with you?
Defense, defense, defense. A lot of people say that offense, you know, the most points wins the game, which is true. But how do you get to that? Are you able to stop the guy in front of you? Are they able to stop you? And piggybacking off of what Eddie Sutton taught us, our premise, our basic foundation for Oklahoma State was we had a bunch of hard-nosed guys that got down, played defense, and did not want the guy in front of us to score a basket on us. That's a major part of the game, and it's lost. You won't see hardly anybody nowadays, high school, college, and it transitions into the pros. Guys, there are a certain amount of guys, maybe a handful of guys, that get down and say, hey, this is what I want to do. This is my job. I do not want that guy in front of me to score the basketball. Prime example, and you can look at arguably the best player in the NBA history, Michael Jordan. He led the NBA all first team defense almost every year, and he was the leading scorer. So that tells you a lot. If you want to be the best, you have to be able to do both. You got to be able to play both sides of the court.
Did you really even understand how to guard before you came here?
I had somewhat of a understanding of it. But when I met Eddie Sutton, he put a big emphasis on defense. And that's, I want to say, the core of what Eddie Sutton was throughout his coaching career. He did not want guys to make other guys look bad. And one way to do that is to get outscored. So if you lock down and play defense, and the guys that we had Ivan McFarland, Daniel Bobic, my brother, myself, Tony Allen, John Lucas, all of the guys that Coach Sutton recruited to come here were able and capable and did play defense at a high level. And that's, I think, what made us so good and why we were able to make it to the Final Four is because we locked down and played defense.
If someone came in and grabbed this microphone and said, Tony Allen could be the greatest defensive basketball player ever, do they have a case?
Top five, I would say yes. Tony Allen, and even when he was in school here, the majority of his job was to score, but Tony took it upon himself to play defense, and it started in practice. We used to come in every day, and Tony would strap up and not let anybody, even in practice, if we were playing pickup, score a basket. That's just who he was. That was his nature. So, granted, when he went to the NBA, it just kind of fell in line. Of course, he could score the ball, but his thing, his bread and butter, was playing defense. So, arguably, yes, I do believe that Tony Allen could go down in history as a top five defender of all time.
Once again, joined by Oklahoma State University wheat breeder Dr. Brett Carver, as we talk about Oklahoma State's world-class wheat breeding program. It's interesting, in athletics, we call it the arms race, facilities, to some extent, coaching salaries in the major sports. You've told me you've got your own arms race in the wheat industry. Tell us about that.
Oh, we certainly do, and it's Great Plains wide. I mean, this stretches a pretty vast area of territory. There's just a tremendous growth in investment in wheat genetics and wheat breeding, both public and private sector. And like I said, it's from one end of the country to the other, and we can see it right here in the Great Plains. One way you can truly see it in the field is in our variety trials. Variety trials that are conducted by all the universities and private companies. This gives the farmer a chance to see his or her variety in the field up against other varieties. And these trials are very important in separating and pointing out differences between them. But I think we've kind of reached a crossroads now because of this arms race and this growth and in our industry. We have an inordinate number of varieties being tested. I can think back, 30 years ago, we may have had 20 varieties in a trial, and that would be pretty easy to compare statistically and just by eye, by the onlooker. Now we're talking about 50 plus, and it could be more. And when you talk about that many varieties, one thing, you have a mechanical issue. It's how do you test that many and really do the right statistics on it and provide the right separation, the right way to separate varieties that farmers can use that information to make decisions on. But it goes beyond that. I think now we're looking at the possibility where we may not be able to test these varieties. Either we change the way we trial, either we change the way we set these trials up, which I think that's coming, or we just don't test everything. And we had that situation come up this year. We had a new Clearfield variety that we wanted to put in, decided to hold it back. Had a Beardless. We just decided to hold that back. And I think in looking forward, I don't think the arms race is going to change. I think that's in full motion. So we have to deal with the race and somehow change our trialing system to accommodate this wider and vast array of genetics.
So what else does this mean as far as the arms race and how it impacts the future? We'll cover that in just a bit with Dr. Brett Carver, Oklahoma State University's wheat breeder. More to come with Joey Graham on the Cowboys Summer Series, brought to you by Learfield IMG College. We continue on the Cowboys Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, as we continue our visit with former Cowboy All-American and former NBAer Joey Graham. Final Four year was 2004. At what point in time did you realize we've got a chance to go far, far? Was there a particular game, a particular moment that it just really hit you? This is something extraordinary.
It hit me my redshirt year.
Really?
Absolutely. A lot of people don't know this, and I've never really expressed this, but that year, that redshirt year, we had a group of guys, Melvin Sanders, Andre Williams, Victor Williams, a lot of those guys. We made it to, the Elite Eight that year? We played
Second round, but almost beat the national champion.
played Syracuse, and I honestly believe if we had a little bit more pieces, I want to say myself and my brother, we might have went and won it that year as well. And we had an opportunity to win it in 2004. But during that red shirt season when we were practicing and playing and watching the guys, I said, we have a really good team. And I've never been a part of anything like that my red shirt year. So coming into the year that I could play, and we added John Lucas, which was the missing link, I knew we were going to go deep. And just rolling, and I can remember going through the first couple games and just playing and trying to get the chemistry of our team together. And once we finally got it, and I want to say right around the end of the Big 12, right rolling into the conference, and then we won the championship, I said, we can do an amazing thing here. We can do something that's pretty much never been done in a long time here for Oklahoma State, which is win a national championship. And I knew it. I got the guys to buy into it, and we just started rolling right after that. So the first round in the regionals, and then after that, we knew it. We believed that we can win this thing. We felt it. We knew it. We had the confidence to do it. But we just fell short by one bucket. So,
but it was still a great run. I mean, it was still a great run. The interesting thing is, early that season, went out to Salt Lake and played Brigham Young, lost that game, got out-rebounded, I think it was by negative 22. That led to the football pads in practice, and that's a whole other story. But people forget, you opened up conference play at Texas Tech and lost by 20 or 25 points. So you mentioned chemistry, but do you remember any defining moments? Because I remember leaving Lubbock thinking, gosh, I don't know how far this team will go. I mean, I think we all felt that way. What went on? Because after that, it changed.
Going back into the BYU game, it was a transitional game for us because we knew exactly what we had to do to get to where we wanted to go. The Lubbock game against Tech was a catalyst. It was a redefining moment as far as us figuring out what we needed to do to be a great team. Yes, we lost, but it was building blocks. And we added on to it. We changed some things, tweaked some things, found out specific positions and plays and roles for guys that we knew that we needed to get to where we wanted to go. So I look at it as a learning and a growing experience. You know, we might have lost, but, you know, and what happened after that? Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah. Visiting with Joey Graham on the Cowboys Summer Series. Okay, so after the Brigham Young loss, I had the good fortune, I guess, of being on the bus in the seat behind James Dickey and Sean Sutton when the thought of practicing in football pads was unhatched. Coach Dickey, and I guess I can tell this story now. If I'm in trouble, I'm in trouble. But they talked in the seat in front of us. Being Mr. Nosey, I was listening. And James said to Sean, go talk to your dad. He went up and talked to Coach. He comes back. Sean does with a big smile on his face and says, it's on. We're going to do it. That is practice in football pads, shoulder pads, and helmets. And that all got brought up to you guys at the Stillwater Airport when you got off the bus that night. When you found out we're going to practice in football gear, what the heck did you think? I remember, of course, I didn't have to do it. I thought it was kind of funny. I couldn't wait to go. But I what were you guys thinking?
Well, it was actually brought up in the locker room after that loss.
Oh, it was?
Actually, it was. When we found out that we were out-rebounded by one player.
Rafael LaRusso.
Rafael LaRusso, and he was actually my teammate in Toronto because he got drafted high. So
you probably heard about it.
I never got lived down, so I had to beat him up in practice every once in a while just to let him know, like, you guys were not a better team than us, even though you are rebounders and you're 7 foot out here playing with a bunch of 6'8", 6'9 guys, you know. But we actually knew, had the idea that Coach was going to do something in the locker room. We were all just sitting around waiting, trying to figure out what exactly were we going to practice when we first got off the plane or what was it. But we didn't know it was going to be shoulder pads and helmets. So you telling me the story about the plane is new, but we knew something was going. We knew something was going to happen. We didn't know if we were going to practice as soon as we got off the plane, if we were going to practice the whole day the next day, We had no idea. So when Coach told us off the plane on the bus, he said, I want you guys to go get fitted with
T-Joe Bro.
There you go. We thought it was a joke. Because
did you really?
We did. Everybody thought it was a joke. We just thought that he was just trying to get us something out of us, you know, a spark of something so we can, you know, continue to win some games. We didn't know he was actually, you know, wanting us to get pads and helmets and shoulder pads. We had no idea. So every morning, usually we have to go in and sign in with the coach. And when we sign in the mornings, usually 7, 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, coach talks to us. So me being one of the leaders, coach put me up in the office and he asked me about everything that he thought. And I was part of the reason why we got our rebounded, of course, me and Ivan McFarland. So he asked me before, he was like, hey, Sean pulled me in his office. He's like, we're going to get shoulder pads and helmets. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, is this like a little gimmick or a game that he's playing to try to, you know, get something out of us? And in our lockers, right before practice, we usually practice around 3, 3:30, and it said, in our locker, it had a big piece of paper that says, go get fitted for shoulder pads and helmets. So when I walked to the locker room after classes, I knew he was serious. So we walked over there to the equipment managers, got fitted, went back into the locker room, came back, and there were shoulder pads and helmets sitting in our locker. And it was the weirdest thing. So we're all in the locker room, all of the players, and we're just sitting there looking at each other, and we're just laughing and giggling. So we all got our practice gear on, and we went out to the court.
And Franz Steen dominated.
He did. He did. He has a rugby background, and me and my brother have a football background as well. So
yeah, you guys did okay, too.
I was excited because I wanted to go hit somebody. I was enjoying it, and I was one of the biggest guys on the team. So, yeah, I was looking forward to it because I wanted to bring out in the rest of the guys that aggressiveness that we needed to get to where we wanted to go in the finals. So I embraced it. My brother embraced it because he liked to fight every day in practice. So he was ready. Some of the other guys, but then some of the other guys didn't want any part. Tony didn't want to put on the shoulder pads. That was, and John Lucas was the smallest guy on the team. So he didn't want any part. The first thing we did when we first got out to the court with the pads and shoulder, we ran 16s. First thing. And a lot of guys don't know when you have shoulder pads and helmets, you can't strap them really hard because then you can't breathe. Yeah. So a lot of guys didn't know that. So guys were passing out on the first drill that we did because they didn't know how to wear the shoulder pads and helmets. They had no football background. So, I mean, it was an interesting experience, but we grew from it. We learned from it, and I think it brought the best out of us. And I do recommend it for other coaches to try. I really do.
Yeah, I think it was Tom Izzo who had tried it before, if I remember correctly, because that was part of the eavesdropping I did in the conversation. I'm sure Coach Dickey and Coach Sean are hearing this thinking, what else did he hear over the years? But that, I'll never forget that. It's one of those things that just sticks in your mind that you don't forget. So wrapping up the thoughts on 04, when you think back on it, because you guys achieved so much, but I also know how competitive all of you are, speaking for the group, do you feel more fulfillment that you achieved what you did or disappointment that you didn't win the whole thing?
It's a little bittersweet. I'm kind of torn because we had the group of guys that could win the championship. We really did. We had the core group that could win it. You always look back now, of course, years later, and you say, we could have won that. And in the moment, you really don't think about it. And I feel at that time we played as hard and as good as we could have played in the moment under the circumstances. But looking back, you think about it and you say, yeah, we left that unfinished. We really did. There might have been some things that we could have done or tweaked or changed that could have got us over that hump and we could have been playing in that national championship game against UConn. And I honestly think if we would have played them, it would have been a better game than the Georgia Tech game because we matched up better with them than Georgia Tech did as far as size and as far as skill. So you never know. You can, of course, go back and say hindsight, this or that or what if or what could have been. But I think I really do in my heart feel that we left that unfinished. And that's always going to be a part of me. That it's always going to be something on the side of my shoulder that's saying, you could have did this. There's something left. There wasn't finished business there. But that's just what that's part of the game. You have to live with it and you move on. You know, we had fun while we were here. We got out of it what we needed to get out of it, which was being around a group of guys and coaches and creating a family atmosphere that you will never forget. And I will have Oklahoma State, my teammates, the coaches, I will never forget, you know, the time that we spend together, the love that we had, the bond that we've created. It will never go away. And that's one thing that I will always take away from Oklahoma State while we were here.
It's funny you say that. I remember when we landed at the Meadowlands for the Sweet 16 game, we got on the bus, and I just turned around. I was sitting next to Joe Riddle, our former engineer, and I just watched you guys interact. We've been around you guys all year, but I remember just thinking, and I think I even said something to Joe. I said, this chemistry, this bond, the comfort that all of you had with one another, that just does not happen every day. I don't know why it struck me at that time. We had a few minutes probably waiting to get off the tarmac to go ahead and go to the hotel, but I just remember at that point, it's like, this is extraordinary. It was, wasn't it?
It was. That bond that you create, knowing what we've been through and where we had to go through to get to where we went, you can't take anything away from us with that. You know, the bond that we created, the blood, and they said blood, sweat, and tears, literally is what we had in that locker room and on that court with the core group of guys that we had. It was literally blood, sweat, and tears. And it went from the last guy on the totem pole all the way up to Eddie Sutton. You know, there was times I would sit up in the office with Eddie and we would just talk and talk and talk. Talk about how he can get the best out of me, how I can get the best out of my teammates. And it's rare. You don't have those type of relationships. It's rare. You have guys, you have coaches that say, hey, this is what I need you to do. Go do it. We're not going to talk. Go do your job. But the details, the things in the middle, you know, that's the stuff that you take away. That's the stuff that you remember for forever. And you can't take anything away from that. And I will forever be indebted to Coach Sutton, Coach Dickey, Sip, Keller, you know, Sean, all the guys, all my teammates for forever, because this experience was amazing.
We'll have more with Joey Graham in just a moment. But in the meantime, a word about Gallagher, one of OSU's outstanding wheat varieties marketed through our friends at Oklahoma Genetics. Gallagher, in fact, has been one of OSU's most planted wheat varieties since its creation. Gallagher has superior fall forage production and grain yield. Its broad disease package is centered on leaf rust and stripe rust. Gallagher is also resistant to Hessian fly and offers above-average milling and baking quality, verified by the Wheat Quality Council. Choose Gallagher, a descendant of Duster and another of OSU's graze and grain wheat varieties. Log on to okgenetics.com to learn more. That's okgenetics.com. Back with more with Joey Graham after this on the Cowboys Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics and Learfield IMG College. This is the Cowboys Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics as we continue our visit with former Cowboy All-American basketball player Joey Graham. One of the things you did here was flight school. Of course, your dad was a pilot and was in the military. Have you ever thought of getting back into flying?
That itch, that passion for flying plane will never leave me as well. I got that itch and burn, as many know, when I was 6 years old. My dad took me up for the first time. So when I had the opportunity to come to Oklahoma State and fly planes, it was a no-brainer for me. Years later, I still have that same itch. It's like eating your favorite food. You never forget about it. You yearn for it. You want it. You might not be able to get it right then at that moment, but you know you're going to try to get it eventually. And I have that same desire to continue to fly. It's just a passion for me. I love to do it. I loved to do it when I was here, and I will get back into it. It's just the time doesn't permit sometimes for you to get back out there. Life happens, family happens, kids of course happen. So when things settle down, of course, we just moved here about a year ago. When things settle down a little bit more, I'm definitely going to take a drive out there to the flight school, get back out there and fly, because my kids now, they're getting close to the same age I was when I first started flying. And my dad flew the same plane that I flew, which was the 182, the Cessna 182. I've showed them that, and they ask me now. They're 3 and 6, and they ask me, Dad, when can we fly? When can we do this? When can we go on the plane? So it's starting to come back around full circle, so I kind of have to do it. You know, it's just – and it's interesting to see how genetics works, because if – let's just say we were going to go to a Chuck E. Cheese or anything like that, my daughters – go to the flying games, and it's really weird. Yeah, it's really weird how that works. They would rather go do that than drive a car or shoot a basketball. They are attracted to the flying games.
Wow.
And the games that they have on their tablets, they're like landing and aviation games. It's really weird. I know, I've never seen anything like that, but it's weird. So I kind of have to expose them to that. It's just part of what parents do. They expose their kids to every avenue, everything, and then let them choose. And I think they might have aptitude to do that. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
Is it true the first time you went up, your dad did some banking and so forth, and you and your brother got sick? Is that true?
He did some slow stalls. And, you know, I know this now, but he was telling me, he's like, when we went back up into the plane years later when we were flying here, he was like, that's the same maneuver I did and you guys threw up. But we were going up to a slow stall, and when you go up, you come down really fast. It's like a roller coaster. And that up and down motion, I think at 6, I wasn't ready for it.
I'm 52, and I'm not ready for it.
So, yeah, it kind of made some things come up. And I can remember, you know, taking off all my clothes, and I'm 6 years old, getting off the plane with just puke all on me. And when I got out and took off all my clothes, I said, let's do it again.
Really?
I said, let's do it again. And, of course, we had to clean the plane, and we couldn't go that exact day. But it was something exciting about it. It was something, yeah, of course you're going to throw up, you get sick. You like roller coasters when you're younger, and, of course, when you get older, sometimes it kind of gets away from you. But I loved it. I wanted to do it more and more and more. My dad used to take us up all the time. So, and then eventually, you pick up things, just like riding a car. You're watching in the passenger seat. If you're driving a stick, you learn how to shift. You learn how to put the clutch down. So when I was, you know, sitting next to him in the cockpit, you see things. You see how he turns the yoke. You see how he throttles up and throttles down. And you see, looking out the windows, and landing and taking off. And it's an experience. If you've never been up in a plane, you have to try it at least once, you know? So
let me ask you this. Because of the height requirement, you couldn't go to the Air Force Academy. Had you been eligible, would you have done that?
Absolutely. My dad was a Navy guy, but I wanted to fly Air Force planes. You know, that's just what it was. But I can remember my freshman or sophomore year in college, I was around 6'2", and my dad took us to Pensacola, and they have a museum up there, Pensacola, Florida, and they have the Naval Museum up there. And you can go in some of the planes and sit down and sit in them. So I was 6'2" at the time, and I went and sat into the cockpit, and I didn't fit. You know, the yoke is right here in between my legs, and I'm like, Dad, it doesn't fit. I'm too big. And at that moment, it was just something that came over me, and I was just so hurt and disappointed. Because, you know, of course, I played basketball. I played other sports at that time. But my passion was to fly planes. I wanted to fly planes in the military. That's just what I wanted to do. And something came over, and I was just so hurt, and I was so disappointed. But I got over it quick, because then I grew 6 inches.
And that took care of that.
Yep.
We are once again joined by Oklahoma State University wheat breeder Dr. Brett Carver. Of course, Oklahoma Genetics is a sponsor of our Cowboys Summer Series, and Oklahoma Genetics is the marketing arm of OSU's world-class wheat breeding program. We were talking about the arms race in wheat earlier in the show. Now my question to you is, how does this impact the producer? Very simply, what's this mean to the producer out there that is trying to maximize his yield?
Well, first and foremost, the producer now has more choices. And choices are good. The producer needs more choices to deal with the elements of climate and disease and insects and all those things. So on the good side, yeah, choices are great. But it also puts a little bit more pressure on the producer to do the necessary due diligence, to research these varieties and figure out what really is best for his or her conditions. And with that number of varieties being tested, the due diligence process is a little bit more intensive. And I think one thing that the producer can do first when considering new varieties is find out where the variety came from. When I go literally shopping for germplasm, that's the breeding material we use in the program, one thing I want to know is where did it come from? Because that tells me, knowing what the program is, what the priorities are. The producer can do the same thing. Know where the variety comes from. However, that is not so easy now to figure out. The transparency is just a little bit less now with this arms race. You don't know exactly where a variety, you may know where it came from in terms of the seed, but you may not know where the genetics came from. So you have to ask, or you have to do your own research. One place that they can do the research is to go to the plant variety protection certificate. We all have to have that to put these varieties in the field and license them. And in that plant variety protection certificate, kind of like a patent, you will learn just how a variety was developed and where it was developed. These are really critical issues, I think, to help sort out what you may not be able to see necessarily in the field at a given time for all these different varieties. And then we talked about, a few sessions ago about the importance of the wheat industry and how they are, the processors, the millers and bakers, and how they are impacting what varieties are being grown. I think that influence is only going to grow, and that is probably going to have an effect on this arms race. It's probably going to temper it a little bit. Instead of, right now we're just pushing all these varieties into the system and hope they get adopted, but it's the processor, the miller and baker, that's going to pull those varieties through the system, and they're going to be a little bit more picky about it, and that's going to kind of put a lid on that arms race to some extent.
That's Oklahoma State University wheat breeder Dr. Brett Carver. More coming up on the Cowboy Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics and Learfield IMG College. With Joey Graham here on the Cowboy Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics. Oklahoma Genetics brings Oklahoma State's world-class wheat varieties to the farmers of the plains. Some final thoughts. How important was it for you to play with your twin brother, with Stevie?
It's an experience that I wouldn't have been able to make it without him. Honestly, it's most people have siblings, and if they have the opportunity to go and be with your brother or your sister in an environment like we had here, there's no way that you can take anything away from that. There's no way I would have been able to come to Oklahoma State without them. And the time that we were actually roommates when we first got here, and the bond that we've created over the years as we were growing up, it increased while we were here in college, because a lot of people don't know, we were kind of on two ends of the spectrum as far as playing and as far as being students here. We started off in different majors. He was going into sports medicine, and then I was going into aviation. He transitioned over to aviation with me. As far as basketball, I played a lot. He didn't play hardly any. So that yin and the yang, the top side of it and the bottom side of it, we met in the middle. And our bond grew. Our love for each other as brothers, as twins grew. And we kind of carried each other through this whole step, this whole process, as far as transitioning from Central Florida to Oklahoma State, growing to be in the same major, which was aviation management, professional pilot, and then playing basketball at the highest level possible. And then we were both blessed to go play in the NBA for a long time. And then even in that, we would play games, and even when we played each other, we would call each other before and after the games and talk about it. You know, that's something that we always did. So we still have that same relationship. We talk to each other almost every other day. We talk about the past. We talk about Oklahoma State. He asks me about Oklahoma State all the time. So I'm sure he's going to find his way back here eventually. We'll see. But he's doing a great job. He's coaching up there with the Nuggets now. So we'll see what happens with that.
Final thought. Now that you're back in Stillwater, as you think back on your time here, who are the people that you will always think fondly of? Coach Sutton, obviously, but who else?
Miss Middlebrook is one. Yeah. I wouldn't have been able to make it definitely without her. She spearheaded with my dad our course of where we were supposed to go. Because when I first came here, I was about architecture. Then I transitioned into journalism. And then aviation management just, boom, shot out of the open. And Ms. Middlebrook was the reason that we went in that direction. And I don't think a lot of guys would have made it here without her. So, and of course, Eddie Sutton and the coaching staff, Sean, Coach Dickey, Sip, Keller, all these guys and my teammates, all the people that I was around, all my teachers, my professors, all the people that I met through the school, just everywhere, the families that, you know, had kids that were fans, being in the gym when, you know, the fans were coming and talking and you take pictures and you sign autographs and all these things. Every single one of these people played a part in me being the person that I was, and I loved every minute of it. And that's one of the reasons why I moved back. So Oklahoma State is number one home for me now.
We are back to wrap things up after this on the Cowboys Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics and Learfield IMG College. Wrapping things up on this edition of the Cowboys Summer Series, and earlier in our show, we told you about Gallagher, one of OSU's outstanding wheat varieties. Well, here's another, a part of the Gallagher legacy. It's Smith's Gold. It was developed out of the legendary Gallagher variety, and it's sure to pin down many challenges that wheat farmers face. First, Smith's Gold offers better canopy hygiene, a later pull-off, and even better baking quality, as affirmed by the Wheat Quality Council. Smith's Gold also provides Hessian fly and green bug resistance and has improved resistance to stripe rust throughout the growing season. It also provides desirable flavor in whole wheat products. Smith's Gold is another in OSU's Grazin Grain and Golden Grain wheat varieties. To learn more about Smith's Gold and other outstanding OSU wheat varieties, log on to okgenetics.com. That's okgenetics.com. Thanks for listening to the Cowboy Summer Series. We're back with you for a final time next week. I'm Dave Hunziker. Have a great week, everybody. This has been the Cowboy Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics and Learfield IMG College.
On the Cowboy Sports Network, from Learfield IMG College, this has been the Oklahoma Genetics Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, bringing OSU's world-class wheat varieties to the farmers of the plains. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Cowboy Sports Network.